You might remember Kanye West's 2007 chart-topping single, Stronger. In the song, West quotes the famous line from Friedrich Nietzsche, "That which does not kill us makes us stronger." According to the Bible, that's true. But in today's world, we are told that the emerging generations increasingly believe the opposite, that what doesn't kill you makes you weaker. Are our kids losing their ability to do hard things and endure difficulty? Are we coddling and protecting them out of healthy growth and development? And what can we do to reverse the tide and begin to facilitate spiritual growth that leads to a life marked by resilience? Stay with us as I chat with my friend Mark Penner about resilience and how to foster it in our kids on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Well, everybody knows that the last year and a half has been extremely difficult. There's all kinds of words we've heard about it, you know, tumultuous, upheaval, cultural conflict. Certainly, we've had to navigate the ups and downs of dealing with a pandemic. And as well, there have been things happening in our culture that our kids have had to navigate, our families have had to navigate, we've had to navigate in our churches related to some of the difficulties related to race and some of the difficulties related to sexuality and gender. We had an election cycle that was tough. And I hear people all the time talking about being stressed out, talking about being anxious. There's so much research that's coming out. It seems like every day there's a new study that pops up on the internet related to teens and anxiety coming out of COVID with all these other things. And it's on our mind, you know, how do we deal with this? Are things different? And certainly before this happened, before COVID happened, there were a lot of books, a lot of writers, you know, culture watchers who were talking about this change, especially among younger folks in terms of not being able to handle difficult things. And the word that comes up a lot is resilience. I looked up the word resilience. I think about a rubber band. You know, when you stretch out a rubber band, you want it to be able to, you know, go back. When you let go of it, you know, the tension pulls it apart and then it goes back to its normal shape. That's what I think of when I think of resilience. The word resilience in the dictionary, when you look it up, is the capacity to recover quickly from difficulties. And then a synonym for that, that some would say is, you know, a good one for resilience, is the word toughness. Another definition is the ability of a substance or an object to spring back into shape, elasticity, and thus the rubber band. And I've had lots of conversations with my dear friend Marv Penner over the last few years just about the observing what we've seen in culture, more generally speaking, and then more specifically in the lives of children and teens and families. And so we decided that today it's worth talking about this cultural reality of resilience or the lack thereof. You know, what contributes to that? Are we accurately seeing this? What does it mean? And how do we begin to respond? So Marv is joining us from, what is it, the North End, Marv, of Vancouver Island?
That's right.
Is that where you are? You're on vacation?
Way up in the wild.
Yeah, so thanks for joining us. And, you know, I'll tell you, one of the difficult things for me, Marv, has been over the last few months, you know, you and I, for decades now, right, in our world of youth ministry, we typically will see each other every 2 to 3 months. We'll be together to teach somewhere, to speak somewhere, you know, to run a seminar. And I have not seen you in person. It's only been virtual or by voice since March, I think, of 2020, when I left one of your Canadian youth worker conventions up there and got on an airplane and came home. And about a week later, everything shut down. So we need to see each other again. We need some,
yeah,
I need some resilience.
You're right. It has been a long time. But I think that's the case for a lot of folks. You know, I mean, they haven't seen family. You know, you've got adult kids who haven't seen their aging parents. It seems to be the reality for everybody. But hopefully we're seeing a little light at the end of the tunnel and life's going to return to normal. I'm looking forward to seeing you certainly this fall when we do a class together in September. So hopefully travel will be moving back to normal. This crazy border closure will be done. Should be good.
Yeah. It's been navigating the U.S. and Canada has been kind of like trying to go through the Iron Curtain before that came down. It's just impossible. So I'm looking forward to that. So, Marv, you know, you've been involved in youth ministry for a long time. You train, you teach, you've been hands-on with students, and now you're doing a lot of counseling of families and of kids. And we've had this conversation. Talk a little bit about some of your concerns regarding resilience or the lack thereof.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first thing that we need to acknowledge is that this issue began to show itself really before COVID. I think there's a lot of folks who are saying, you know, COVID has sort of been the cause of a lot of mental health issues for kids, anxiety, depression, so on. I have no question in my mind that it may have exacerbated the issues at some level, but probably since 2008, 2010, so for the last 10 or 12 years, I would say, I have observed in my counseling practice and in my work with students generally that there has been a deterioration of mental well-being, emotional well-being, relational well-being, and it expresses itself in all sorts of ways. You know, one of the things that we know statistically, just as one of the benchmarks, is that from about the 1980s to the early 2000s, the suicide statistics for adolescents remained almost plateaued. I mean, there was still way too many kids taking their own lives, but the stats stayed pretty steady. And then around 2009, 2010, we began to see an uptick. Over the last 10 years, we've seen those numbers double. Sadly, the highest increases are coming with young adolescent girls. So there was something going on long before COVID came along. So I think we need to look at this as a bigger cultural issue. It's not just that we've had this year and a half of abnormality, and when COVID's done, all this stuff will go away. I think it's with us. It was with us before COVID. It will be with us after COVID. So it would be naive to think that, you know, once life returns to normal, whatever that is, you know, we can expect that this stuff's going to come back to normal as well, because it wasn't normal before. You know, when I'm getting calls from parents, and this has been for the last 10 years, it's almost always, you know, I need some help with my adolescent, my, you know, 14-year-old daughter, my 16-year-old son. And I say, can you describe what it is that's going on? And almost without exception, they talk about anxiety. That their anxiety is paralyzing, their anxiety is keeping them from performing at school, their anxiety is keeping them from engaging socially, their anxiety is keeping them from engaging with the family. Parents often leading with this presenting problem. My kid is trapped in this world of anxiety. It seems like a loop that they just can't break out of. Frankly, by the way, when I talk to students about this, when I talk to teenagers, they often describe it as a loop as well, this ever increasing intensity of this loop that they can't seem to break free of. You know, I just want to start by saying that anxiety is real. You know, what these kids are experiencing, the mental anguish of being trapped in this loop of despair and helplessness, of fear, is a very, very real thing. But what I'd like to say, Walt, is that we need to stop thinking about anxiety only as an emotional experience. I think we need to understand that anxiety is actually a way of thinking. So anxiety is a cognitive process as much as it expresses itself in all sorts of emotional and physiological and endocrinological ways. You know, the body certainly responds with all sorts of very real physiological and cognitive and relational and emotional responses. But anxiety probably needs to be understood as a way of thinking. Because if it's just emotions, then our only option is to try to manage those emotions. If we begin to see it as a way of thinking about life and circumstances and relationships, then perhaps that gives us a little better opportunity to respond to it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I want to ask you, you know, what? So I'm thinking about that, and you know, if we were to have a graph in front of us right now that everyone could see, I would guess that, you know, we'd see based on the data that the level of anxiety among kids and the prevalence of anxiety among, you know, children and teens would be on a, you know, a steady climb on a graph, right?
Right.
Over the years. But it's always been there. But it's, why is it so different now? You know, what differentiates this emerging generation from prior generations who, yeah, I don't ever remember really talking about anxiety. I remember feeling stressed out, but, you know, it's so much a part of the vocabulary of kids as they work to sort of self-identify what it is that they're dealing with. And I think parents are hearing, as you said, parents are hearing this as well. This is why they're coming to you and saying this. People are articulating this. So there must be, you know, something
yeah.
is changing. I mean, you know, what, talk a little bit about that.
Well, certainly. I mean, it's interesting the way you phrased that just a moment ago. You said I was stressed out, but I don't remember talking about anxiety. And one of the things that we're going to have to unpack here today is the connection between stress and anxiety. And so certainly life will always have its share of stresses. The scripture reminds us of this on numerous occasions. That life comes with certain stresses. And because we live in a broken world that is groaning under the weight of sin and that the choices that we make, so certainly there is a constant sense of stress in our world. But what I want to suggest is that stress is not the enemy as some of us have assumed that it is. So we will need to distinguish at some point in our conversation today the relationship between stress and anxiety, and frankly, the relationship between stress and resilience. Because, you know, what I'd love to unpack with you is the fact that without stress, there is no resilience. So it seems a little counterintuitive. I understand why parents would say, if all I could do was reduce the stress in my kid's life, then maybe I would reduce their predisposition to being anxious. But in the process of eliminating stress, we also eliminate the context in which resilience can be formed. Because as your definition said a couple of minutes ago, resilience is the capacity to spring back or to return to your previous reality from a time of pain or hardship or loss or criticism. Maybe stress isn't the enemy. It's the way we deal with stress that leads us down one path or the other, the path to resilience if we process stress appropriately, or the path to anxiety if we process stress inappropriately. That's one factor. The other thing you talk about is, you know, what's the difference between this generation and previous generations? And I think that one of the things that that is true of this generation of young people, certainly their unfettered access to information. And one of the areas that they have a great deal of information on And because of their sort of global collaboration on social media, this information is generated in lots of their conversations. It has to do with issues of mental health. Sadly, and I know this may be an unpopular thing to say, but in the process of destigmatizing mental health, what we have done is we have given everyone permission to be mentally unhealthy. And so now this idea that, I've got some sort of a mental health crisis going on in my life has become ubiquitous. Everybody now is self-diagnosing, and our language, our cultural language, has become highly therapeutic, and kids are picking up on that language. And so many of them self-diagnosing based on their access to information about mental health. And so the language of claiming anxiety, claiming depression, claiming, various struggles along those lines is now just becoming sort of the common cold. The problem that I have with this as a therapist is that if everybody has mental health issues, then those who actually have mental health issues kind of get lost in the crowd. It feels to me like we're not able to turn our attention on those who really need the support, because the lineups at the door are endless with kids who are self-diagnosing claiming this as their reason. If I have anxiety or if I have depression, then your expectations of me need to be dramatically lowered. Then you need to adjust, so that I can be okay. The idea now that that we have to adjust to the self-diagnosis of a 13 or 14 year old has now become sort of the cultural norm. So I know I've dumped a huge load there. Well, lots for you to push back on.
And we've talked about these things before, and in many ways my mind is spinning like it has before because I have all kinds of thoughts. Just one of the things we've talked about in the past is that, and you've said this now, I believe, but just to clarify, that we have this word anxiety, but realities, and they're real, realities that maybe should be put in another bucket under another label. Kids are dumping into the anxiety, or parents are dumping into the anxiety bucket. So we're not really perceiving well, relatively speaking, what it is that we're actually dealing with. And then the other reality that I'm thinking about here as we talk about this is, as more and more kids do this, there's also the opportunity for a social contagion to take place where, since everyone else is feeling this, I need to feel it or I'm going to be left out. And not only do I need to feel it, but I need to post about it on social media so that I get the responses, the likes, the follows, the empathetic, sympathetic responses of, people who are reaching out to me to care for me. And I mean, it's complex when you think about it, but there are so many things that are combining here. And we need to take a break, but when we come back, I want to talk about that adjustment that you mentioned, so everybody's like this. So now you have to adjust to me. And I want to talk a little bit about how that works out and how that really isn't, helpful to somebody who needs to be taught how to deal with things in a more balanced, God-honoring way, I would say. So let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation with Marv Penner. We're talking about anxiety and stress and resilience and all the kinds of things that kids are talking about dealing with now. We'll be right back.
If you enjoy listening to Youth Culture Matters and would like to support the ongoing efforts of this ministry, you can do so by visiting cpyu.org/giving to make a donation. Your prayers and financial support make this podcast possible.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to Youth Culture Matters. We're having a great conversation with Mark Penner about difficult things. We do that a lot here on Youth Culture Matters. We talk about difficult cultural realities, the things we need to understand and navigate, and certainly the realities of resilience or the lack thereof, the epidemic that we're hearing about of anxiety among young people and stress. We need to have a conversation about that. Mark's been very helpful, not just in this conversation, but to me for so many years in helping me understand this. And I know Marv has read a lot of the same things that I've read, some of the thinkers and the practitioners and the folks in the medical community, even the educational community, who have come out and talked about what they're seeing and what they're hearing. We've had Leonard Sachs on the podcast before, Dr. Leonard Sachs, who's a physician. He's written books about girls, he's written books about boys, and he wrote a book called The Collapse of Parenting, How We Hurt Our Kids When We Treat Them Like Grownups. I remember him saying, Chris, he didn't like that subtitle for some reason. I think he just wanted to leave it The Collapse of Parenting, you know, what we're not doing right. And in his book, he asks the question in one of the chapters, why are so many kids so fragile? And this is a change, right? There's been a drift towards this. And he starts the chapter, this is really helpful, with a quote from someone we've all read, Gene Twenge at San Diego State, who's tracked narcissism and then wrote the book iGen a few years ago, one of the books we highly recommend that parents and youth workers read. And Twenge actually says this. She says, many college faculty and staff report a noticeable fragility among today's students. Some describe them as teacups, beautiful, but liable to break with the slightest drop. And, you know, Marv, you were starting to talk there about how, with the realities of this epidemic unfolding, if we can call it an epidemic, with the realities of that, now we have young people saying, hey, you have to adapt to me. And I know in higher education, this is an issue. You can't give me too much work. You can't commit violence with your words by sharing an idea that I might find offensive. You know, that's triggering bad emotions in me. That's causing me to be more stressed out and to become anxious. You know, talk a little bit about that. You know, what's your perspective on that? Have you seen that happening? And you know, obviously we want to move on from there to talk about how to start to push back on this a bit and remedy this.
Yeah, obviously, it's something that we've all seen. As a college professor, of course, I've seen that in the classroom. I see it with the students that I work with now. I'm sorry, I just can't come to class because I'm dealing with my anxiety right now. If you could just lower your expectations. That's the primary adjustment that we're being asked to make, is that we need to lower the expectations because I'm a victim of this condition that is outside of my control. It's a reality for me, and therefore you can't expect any more of me. It's just not fair for you to keep the bar as high as you are. I do think that this has been a cultural phenomenon that's grown over the last probably 30 to 40 years, where parents began to move into that place of friendship with kids. It's not to say that we're not meant to have a great relationship with our kids, but friendship is what we're shooting for when our kids are adults. Parenting is what we're called to when our kids are younger. And it seems to me like, in my, 40 or more years of working with families, I've gradually seen parents moving more and more to the posture of preparing the road for their children instead of preparing their children for the road. I'm going to clear out any obstacles that might be there. I'm going to go to bat for you. If life seems unfair, I'm going to make sure that you don't have to deal with the hardship of anyone else's decisions or being treated the way that you're being treated. I'm going to fix that for you. And so we have a generation of parents that are frantically trying to eliminate any stresses from their kids' lives. And as I mentioned before the break, in the process of doing this, as well-meaning as we might be, we're actually now eliminating the potential for our kids to develop resilience, because stress is part of what makes us strong. Obviously, we've got to make sure that we don't subject our kids to stresses that will destroy them. But certainly, stress is part of what it means to become resilient in meaningful ways. And I think that's where our response needs to be.
I like that. And it draws me back to the book, The Coddling of the American Mind. And just that word coddling, we think about,
right,
snowplow parents, lawnmower parents, helicopter parenting. We have all these labels for that, where parents, as you say, are hovering, paving the way, removing any obstacles or hurdles that might challenge a young person out of their, comfort zone or their ability to deal with things where they're at. And we realize that, you've got to go further than that. Well, in the book, The Coddling of the American Mind, Jonathan Haidt and Greg Lukianoff, they talk about this. And one of the things that they say, I'm just going to read this, if we protect children from various classes of potentially upsetting experiences, we make it far more likely that those children will be unable to cope with such events when they leave our protective umbrella. The modern obsession with protecting young people from feeling unsafe is, we believe, Haidt and Lukianoff, one of the several causes of the rapid rise, as you said, Marv, in rates of adolescent depression, anxiety, and suicide. So they talk a lot about, they use the word safetyism, that we as parents have jumped into a kind of parenting that's, safetyism, where, we're just eliminating all these opportunities for growth. It's kind of like, you want your kids to get big and strong, but you won't let them go anywhere near a gym or engage in any sort of physical activity that will stretch right. their muscles and strengthen their muscles. And what we're doing is we're basically undermining the success of the very thing that we hope, happens. So, by eliminating yeah. any kind of risk at all.
I love that analogy, Walt, because resilience is a muscle that needs to be strengthened, that needs to be worked, and that with use will become, that much stronger. But in order for us to really sort of figure out how to do this practically, I think we need to understand the kind of stresses that our kids engage in, and I've kind of looked at stress through three different lenses, and I think if we understand those various categories of stress, we'll understand how we can leverage them in a way to actually develop resilience in our kids. Can we talk a little bit about the kinds of stress kids face?
I like what you said there. It's not eliminating these things, it's leveraging them.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, let's hear what they are.
So let's talk about the kind of stresses that kids face. Now, the first category that I'd like to introduce is what I would call foreseen and avoidable stress. Foreseen or foreseeable and avoidable. So this is stress that is coming down. You know that this particular thing is going to be stressful, but I could avoid it if I wanted to. So this would be something like trying out for a team or trying a new experience or going on a trip away from my family. Going away to summer camp, even for younger kids. So it's foreseeable. We know that this is going to be stressful at some level, and we can avoid it. And we can avoid it usually by just not engaging in it. So opting out is kind of the way that we typically deal with foreseeable and avoidable stresses. So I'm just not going to audition for the play, because if I don't audition, then I won't have to deal with the stress of that. And so foreseeable and avoidable stresses are those that that we can just opt out of, keep our life simple. That way, it's not stressful, and I'll have no problem surviving. The second category of stress is foreseeable and unavoidable stress. So this would be something like graduation. You know, I'm going to graduate from high school. I can see it coming. I know it's going to be stressful, but probably I can't avoid it. I mean, I suppose theoretically you could drop out of school, but you know, this is coming. You know, going for my driver's test. It's foreseeable, but probably you know, unavoidable. Now, in a more difficult kind of context, it would be something like a parent with a terminal illness. I know that my my mom has been given 6 months to live. It's foreseeable and it's unavoidable. There's nothing I can do to change that. It's going to happen, you know, whether I want it to or not. So this is quite different than the foreseeable and avoidable because it's like being tied to railroad tracks and seeing the train coming. I can't get out of the way. This stress is coming, and it's inevitable. And then, of course, that third category of stress would be the unforeseeable and unavoidable. And so this is the stressful stuff that blindsides a person. You know, it could be as simple as getting cut from the team or dumped by your girlfriend or boyfriend, or it could be like we had in our community just a week and a half ago, three teenagers killed in a car wreck, you know, just a few days before graduation, three seniors in our community, you know, well-loved kids, and a school that was just left reeling by this unforeseeable and unavoidable. It blindsided them, just a horrible tragedy, and, you know, or the sudden death of a parent, or you know, the list goes on, just the things that blindside us in life. Now, you'll notice a progression in those three categories of stress from the avoidable to the unavoidable to the unforeseeable and unavoidable. And what I'd like to suggest is that we teach our children resilience in their earliest experiences with it. We teach them through foreseeable and avoidable stresses. We encourage them to engage in things that aren't going to be easy. We push them to stretch those muscles by trying something that involves risk. So that foreseeable and avoidable stress is always stress that involves a measure of risk. And as parents, what we can do, and even as youth workers to some degree, so I know there's lots of youth workers listening to this, you know, what we can do is build into our programs some ways that kids are stretched that you know, they have to opt into. And then by debriefing those experiences, hey, that was scary, wasn't it? That was out of your comfort zone. You know, we typically learn far more from discomfort than we do from comfort. And so whether it's in the home or in our ministries, we offer kids experiences that will be uncomfortable, that will stretch them, that will push them beyond their comfort zone. And then we appropriately debrief those because, you know, I'd like to take your definition of resilience from the top of the show, Walt, and stretch it just a little bit further. You know, you talked about resilience being the ability to bounce back from or return to the original, you know, after an experience of pain or hardship or, you know, struggle or whatever. I'd like to say that a resilient person actually doesn't just bounce back from those experiences, but actually grows as a result of them. So resilience isn't just coming back to your original shape. It's coming back stronger. It's coming back wiser. It's coming back more courageously. Hey, look, I tried this thing that I knew would be scary. I accomplished it. I succeeded. I survived. That gives me courage for the next time. And so I'm going to take another risk sometime because I know that taking a risk isn't a bad thing. I actually am strengthened by taking a risk and experiencing something that requires me to reach a little deeper into my resources. And so resilience actually strengthens us. It doesn't just return us to our original shape. Is that still true to your understanding of resilience?
Oh yeah, I think that's a great way to add to that. Can you give us, you know, so for a youth worker or a parent, what would be some of those experiences? You know, the first thing that comes to mind for me is, you know, 30, 40 years ago when we started to get into ropes courses and initiative games.
Sure.
And, you know, people need to work together. And I'm thinking, Barb, I'm kind of laughing because we went through this, right? I mean, when we were out in Colorado, our buddy Rich Van Pelt took us to Noah's Ark and put us up on a high ropes course, which you navigated very well because of your experience as a firefighter. But I will say this, that there were a couple of us in the group, myself included, and then a guy named Duffy, who, you know, I think when he looked at me and I looked at him, there was that we were trying to cover our looks of terror. And, you know, as an adult, I remember this. You guys said, okay, Walt, you go first. And I felt, I said to Lisa afterwards, I said, you know, I felt this tremendous peer pressure that I couldn't push back, and I had to do this. And, you know, I was able to do it as a guy who doesn't like heights. And you know, my heart was beating out of my chest, obviously, but there was great success afterwards. And I was like, yeah, okay, yeah, I did that, you know.
And it's the afterwards that matters.
Yeah.
You know, when you landed back on solid ground at the end of that thing, you look back on it and looked up at those ropes and those bridges and the stuff that we had navigated, and you're like, I did that. I didn't know if I'd be able to, but I did it. And that evokes courage. That's all there is to it. Now, the point is that as parents, we encourage our kids to, you know, even little things like, you know, why don't you go over and introduce yourself to that other new kid at the church? Just go over and say hello. Oh, I don't want to. I'm nervous. No, go ahead and give it a shot. And so we push our kids, you know, in terms of social risks that they take. And you know, I mean, even the word risk, you know, sounds so awful, but risks are appropriate because then when the foreseeable and unavoidable stresses become part of our lives, then we go back to the courage that was learned in those chosen risks that we took. And we apply that courage to a situation where we don't have the ability to opt out. You know, it's going to happen. And as we anticipate that, you know, let's take something tragic like I suggested earlier. My parent has a terminal disease. They have 6 months left to live, 3 months, 2 months. I know that I'm going to lose my parent, but I know that I'm going to survive. I know that I'm going to be okay because it was actually this parent who taught me courage, who taught me that hardship comes. And when we draw on the resources around us, both spiritual and relational community resources, I will survive this. And then of course, when we get into the unforeseeable, unavoidable, those moments that blindside us, then we've got the tools in place. Now, with the unforeseeable and unavoidable, there's another element that comes with resilience. And that is that I am going to fully embrace the emotional reality of this experience that I'm in the midst of right now. I'm not going to pretend that it doesn't matter. I'm not going to try to sidestep the emotions of it. With integrity and authenticity, I'm going to feel the fear. I'm going to feel the anger. I'm going to feel the loneliness, the helplessness. And so, you know, one of the things that we teach our kids in sort of those first two stages of stress is to fully be present in those experiences. Yeah, this is going to be scary. You know, this is going to take a risk. Feel that risk, feel the pounding of your heart in your chest, go and do it. because then when that blindsided experience comes, the thing that just comes out of the blue and bites you without warning, then what you can do is stop and say, all right, I am going to be fully present in this moment. I'm going to allow myself to feel those emotions, because those emotions aren't going to lead me to a place of, you know, helpless anxiety. Those emotions are actually going to lead me to a place of deep healing. And very often, you know, when I'm dealing with adolescents who are trying to unpack trauma from their past, you know, sexual abuse or children of divorce or children of parents who have substance issues or, you know, whatever, that kind of stuff, we got to go back and sometimes be present emotionally in those moments, because they didn't have the tools when they were younger to actually experience those moments fully. And therefore, they haven't been able to experience any kind of meaningful healing. And so, you know, we use the foreseeable and avoidable stresses to teach the basic fundamentals that life isn't going to kill you. And then the foreseeable and unavoidable, that's where we practice courage. And then for unforeseeable and unavoidable, those blindside experiences that we have, now it gives us the capacity to be fully present. Instead of pretending that this isn't happening or denying that it's happening, I can live in the emotional reality of whatever it is that's going on, knowing that I will survive. And that's really what it comes down to.
This, a lot of this reminds me of in the Coddling the American Mind. They talk about the three bad ideas, or the three great untruths that
right.
people come to believe. And the first one is the untruth of fragility, and it is what doesn't kill you makes you weaker, which is totally contrary to what the scriptures teach as well. So this is really good. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little more as we finish out and round out our conversation about some of the tools and resources we have as followers of Jesus Christ too, and as people in youth ministry, as parents and in the church, you know, tools that we can lean into, resources we can lean into to help not only ourselves but our kids navigate this as well. So stick with us. We'll be right back. Hey, youth workers, I want to let you know about a podcast resource we've recently launched here at CPYU that's just for you. Our brand new The Word in Youth Ministry podcast is a podcast by youth workers and for youth workers that will help you build and improve your ability to teach the Bible and theology to your students. There is not a more important discipleship task than correctly teaching the truths of God's Word to the kids we've been called to lead. We want them to hear the biblical narrative over and above the constant 24/7 noise of the cultural narrative. So check out The Word in Youth Ministry podcast. You can find it at cpyu.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Well, you know, Marv, as we finish up our conversation here and I think about stress and anxiety and resilience, everything we've been talking about here, I think about it in the context of faith. And my mind keeps going back to many of the biographies, first-person accounts, and memoirs of missionaries that I've read over the years who put themselves in situations where this kind of stuff was absolutely unavoidable, but yet they come out the other side, even after moments of great unexpected tragedy, that third category you're talking about here, unforeseeable and unavoidable things that you're blindsided by. One of the names that pops up is a woman who I've read much of her work, and I was always fascinated by just how she dug her heels in and leaned into God's grace. But Elizabeth Elliot, you know, for those who don't know the story of Through Gates of Splendor and the, you know, murder of her husband just shortly after they arrived in that missionary field. I mean, it's amazing when you hear that story. And then you watch how her life is unfolded. And I remember a friend of mine years ago gave a talk about dealing with difficult things and how when we come out of difficulties, we can either become bitter or better. You know, that's an old you know, you've heard that over, you know, I've heard that the cliche before from others as well.
Yeah. The reason things become cliches is because they're true.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, the beauty of navigating all this, I mean, as you're talking here, I'm thinking to myself, how can I navigate any of this? Or how can I prepare my kids to navigate any of this if I lived outside of the realm of Christian faith and the promises of God and the resource of Scripture? And that's where I want to end, you know, just talking a little bit about some of the tools and some of the resources that we can equip our kids with, obviously in a preventive way. You know, we work to prepare them for down the road. There's going to be difficult things you face in life, right? That's what we're talking about here. And so what can we fill them with beforehand? And then even in that moment where life has come undone and someone's picking the glass out of their face after, you know, the literal or figurative car wreck of difficult circumstances, you know, how do we help, and what are some of the resources we can provide?
Well, the first thing is sort of on a practical level, and then let me move to some theological thoughts. But the reality is that if we think about stress as an inevitability, stress is going to come. It leads us to a fork in the road. Let's say the left fork is marked by feelings of helplessness, victimization, and despair. That is inevitably going to lead to anxiety. Helplessness, victimization is the context in which anxiety flourishes. It just feeds off that sense of helplessness. I begin to think about the possible outcomes, assume the worst, and then begin to think that this worst possible outcome is inevitable. I am a victim. There's nothing I can do about this. I can't change the outcome. That's a path from stress that leads to anxiety. The other side of that is a path that would be marked by a sense of agency or volitionality or the capacity to choose. And so anything we can do to help our children, whether we're doing this as a ministry leader or we're doing this as a parent, anything we can do to help them realize that they are people who choose. We choose how we respond. We choose what our next step is going to be. We choose whether we're going to embrace the emotional reality of this in the moment or not. And so what we want to do is reinforce with our sons and daughters, with the young people in our care, that you are a choosing human being. You are not just a victim of circumstances here, and you get to choose how you're going to respond to this. And so every one of those moments of hardship, whether they're significant or insignificant, becomes a teachable moment for us. We reinforce the sense, hey, you may not have been able to choose that circumstance, but you can choose how you process it now, how you deal with it, how you respond. And so reawakening a sense of volitionality in a culture of victims may be our most significant practical gift that we can give our kids. So that's real important. Secondly, we model what it means to live resiliently. And so I think as parents, we often underestimate how cognizant our kids are of what's going on in our lives. But the truth of the matter is that our kids know exactly what's going on in our lives. They know the condition of our marriage. They know, where we're at spiritually. They're tuned into that, maybe more than anybody else in the world. Our kids are tracking with that. And so what we do is when we experience hardship some of it is chosen, like the foreseeable and avoidable, but we choose to take certain steps of faith, certain risks that we take, and our kids see us doing that. When there's an unavoidable situation that comes along, We show them how to live courageously. So we're modeling resilience for them. We're not helpless victims. And so I think that's really significant. And then at a theological level, there are two things that kids need to know. And, you know, they have been theologically juxtaposed since the beginning of time. And so they're difficult concepts to reconcile. But resilient people have reconciled these two theological realities. One is that God is sovereign, and the other is that God is good. So as we encounter the stresses and hardships of life, if we're not convinced that God is good, you know, obviously he is not going to be a resource for us in the midst of those hard times. And if we doubt his goodness, then he's not going to be any help in this situation. And if we doubt his sovereignty, then life just becomes a series of random events that have no purpose. But the scripture seems to indicate that that's not how it works, that God actually allows stresses in our lives for a purpose. If you look at James chapter 1, it's very, very clear that we're actually supposed to be grateful for stresses that come into our lives, because those stresses are designed to strengthen our character. Real clear. In Hebrews chapter 12, we see the writer to the Hebrews kind of talking about the metaphor of an earthly father who disciplines his children, and then asks the rhetorical question, you know, how much more will your heavenly father, who loves you more than any earthly father could, discipline you in ways that are going to strengthen you for the future? When God brings discipline into our lives, it is actually, you know, biblically, it's very clearly to prepare us for the difficult things that may still lie ahead. It's how we're strengthened. And then in 1 Peter, the word perseverance is used, and the idea that perseverance leads to character. So we add character to our perseverance. And I think this is where we get another really practical insight for parents. When we see our kids persevering, which isn't exactly a synonym for resilience, but certainly closely related to resilience, I think it's an element of resilience is perseverance. And when we add character to our perseverance, then that leads to greater growth, greater dependence on God, and so on. So character, when we affirm our children, what we want to constantly affirm is character. When we simply affirm performance or achievement, you know, academics, athletics, physical appearance, those sorts of things, what we do is we put additional pressure on our kids.
Yep.
Because they begin to think that the affirmation is somehow dependent on their ability to perform or achieve or make us, you know, feel good. It puts a massive stress or pressure on them. But when we are able to affirm character instead of simply performance or achievement, then kids recognize, oh, my courage was significant here. My honesty, my kindness, my humility, my patience, those are the things that are fundamental. And those are the things that when we emphasize or reinforce those notions of character around experiences of perseverance or resilience. And when kids can combine the idea that I managed this difficult circumstance that I found myself in a way that not only demonstrated, but strengthened my character, now we've got something to talk about. You know, now we've got something that's actually building foundational skills, because ultimately, youth ministry or parenting, doesn't matter which angle you come at this from, we're all about raising adults. And for an adult to navigate in this world, they cannot assume the perennial victim posture. Resilience, courage, character, crucial for being a healthy adult. And we have the opportunity, while our kids are young and malleable, to build those things in. I believe that the most significant gift a parent can give a child, you know, apart from introducing them to Jesus, is the gift of resilience. If we can be intentional about building resilience in our kids, I promise whoever is listening to this thing, that will put your kid head and shoulders above their generation, because they are growing up in a generation that seems to be devoid of resilience. So if our kids can learn resilience, what a leg up that gives them. What an advantage that gives them. You know, not only in terms of being positioned in our culture, but in terms of having a joyful life. It's a huge gift. And I'm so glad we got to talk about it today.
Yeah, I want to echo what you said there, because, you talk about giving them the gift of Jesus, pointing them to Jesus Christ and what it means to follow Jesus, and then also resilience, that gift. And, you know, when you come to faith in Christ, when Christ calls us and we truly live into what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ who denies self, I really believe that resilience in so many ways is a byproduct of that. And, you know, we've said here for years now that one of the missing links in not only youth ministry, but church ministry as well, in this culture, this therapeutic culture where we do everything we can to pursue pleasure and avoid pain, is a theology of suffering, which, as you mentioned with some of the passages you talked about there and elsewhere in the scriptures from Genesis to Revelation, we know that God works in mighty ways through suffering. And that is how we grow in our faith and dependence on Him. So, you know, that's a beautiful thing. And I also want to reiterate what you said about, you know, owning things and choosing to live into it, you know, in the much more familiar with this than I am, but just cognitive behavioral therapy, where, you know, you're being taught to identify the lies and that you believe and call them the lies, and then speak truth to yourself when you're in a situation. And that's an ongoing practice. I like to think of cognitive gospel therapy, you know, that I need that, where I speak.
Which is Romans 12:2.
Yeah.
No longer conformed to the pattern of the world, but transformed by the renewing of your mind, by the renewing of your thinking. That's where transformation comes.
Yeah. Because, you know, parents and youth workers, you need to hear this. I mean, we realize that all of us will encounter suffering, and that's one of the greatest tools in God's toolbox to take us out of ourselves and into Him, to get to form us into the people that He intends us to be. So this is really good. I want to mention, and Marv, you may have a couple of resources you can mention as well. But, you know, one of the books that it's been helpful to me is by Ed Welch, A Student's Guide to Anxiety. That's a great one for you as youth workers and parents to work through with your kids, where he'll take you into the scriptures to gain a biblical perspective on anxiety, much like Marv did here with us today. And that's really a good one. Diane Langberg's book, Suffering in the Heart of God, which is about trauma and helps us understand how to navigate trauma and difficult circumstances with kids and adults alike. I was thinking of that as Marv was talking. Is there anything else, Marv, you would recommend?
Yeah. Philip Yancey's done such a great job in several books talking about the place of growing through pain. I think that's probably helpful. The books you mentioned are great. But I think that at the end of the day, our best resources are relational for those of us who are a little further down the path than our young people are, as parents, as adults in the church. For us to live lives of courage, lives of resilience, honestly and authentically embracing the emotional reality of the hardships that come our way, and then demonstrating to the young people who are looking at us that this doesn't end our lives. This actually builds our foundation, strengthens our roots, whatever metaphor you want to use. And so we are the resource for this next generation, if I can put it that way.
Yeah. And boy, this is where the intergenerational nature of the church is so important.
So important.
It breaks my heart when I hear about churches where the youth ministry is totally separate from everything else, even in terms of on a Sunday morning where kids worship by themselves, and rather than being able to, you know, worship with a full body of Christ and get to know other folks, it's hard. We just had Tony Satter on the podcast, and he is, you know, talking about the power of prayer and the Pray For Me campaign, and he just released a book for grandparents who are so
right.
important. You're a grandparent, I'm a grandparent, and
yep.
my heart just aches for my grandkids, you know, growing up in today's world, but I also know that my presence is there, and I need to leverage that, and certainly being with them and being transparent with them, you know, looking for those teachable moments, but praying for them is so important. So this is good. I'm going to end with this. Marv, you know, our mutual friend Dean Borgman, who has been
yeah.
around for so long, he wrote a book called Hear My Story a few years ago, and I always go back to this one page where he asks the question, what are the characteristics of resilient youth? And he looks at a lot of the research that's done, and you know, he wonders why some people are more resilient than others. And he says that there's a series of external factors that contribute to positive results in terms of creating resilience. So, you know, you would agree with all these. I'll just rifle through them very quickly. A few bullet points here, I think seven of them. First, strong family nurture. Second, an ability yep. to find other sources of help and support. And, you know, I'll just throw into that. You know, you heard Marv talk today. He's a counselor. And to get counselors involved, good Christian counseling is helpful. An important person outside of the family circle. Being well-liked by friends and peers. And that's that. The important thing there is to get into a positive peer group where you don't have to be performing all the time. And certainly social media is contributing to this lack of resilience in our kids.
Yeah.
An ability to make school a sanctuary or home away from what may be a chaotic family situation, participation in extracurricular activities, and help from a church youth group, youth leader, or minister. And we could add more to that, but I just thought those are some great things to remember. So Marv, thank you so much. Thanks for your work. We will put links to everything that was mentioned today and more, and we will include links to Marv's books. We didn't mention those, but if you go to cpyu.org and look for the particular player for this episode of the Youth Culture Matters podcast, underneath Chris Wagner, we'll post links to everything that we've talked about here today and more. And we encourage you all to, wherever you get your podcasts, subscribe, share, like, give us a good review. That helps us. And Marv, thank you so much. I'm hoping it's only going to be about, what, 3 more months till I see you face-to-face,
yeah, there
right?
you go.
Yeah, so
right.
hopefully in September,
can't
if
wait.
They open the border, if they tear down that wall, we'll get to be together. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you, Marv. And we look forward to chatting with you all on the next episode of Youth Culture Matters.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent-Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.